Welcome to The Extra, the show that connects you with the people, issues, and topics that are important to you. And today, our focus is on the city of Colorado Springs and certainly what the state of the city is. I know we use that term every year. Mayor John Suthers will give his State of the City address, but we get, I guess, a little bit of an earlier preview of what the state of the city is because we get to talk to him directly here on this show about how we're doing in the city, areas that need attention, and areas where there are some successes to be celebrated. So I'd like to welcome to the show Mayor John Suthers. He joins us for this call-in segment of The Extra. And thanks so much, Mayor.
Shannon, I'm glad to be with you.
Oh, I'm glad to talk to you. I last got to see you, although everybody was wearing masks, I believe, at the opening of the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Museum, a momentous structure, and what a great attraction for our city. A little bit of a letdown that it couldn't have all the fanfare I know that had been planned pre-COVID times, pre-pandemic.
Well, exactly. It would have been obviously a much bigger grand opening celebration if, in fact, we weren't under the cloud of COVID. But it is open, and it's not only an iconic architectural structure, one of the most anticipated architectural structures in the country for 2020, in the world for 2020. And then the museum itself is a tremendous combination of really well-done static exhibits and a lot of very interactive exhibits. It's outstanding, and I would encourage, they need, in this COVID era, they need the support of a lot of local folks and regional folks and state residents to get us through, this first summer. And I'd encourage all our citizens to go down and see the museum. It is really spectacular.
Wow, yes. And when you're talking about this, it kind of continues on with the emphasis that has been on making Colorado Springs fulfill its promise as the City of Champions.
Absolutely, in Olympic City, USA. I mean, we started out 40 years ago attracting the Olympic Committee to Colorado Springs, which was kind of a shocker that they pulled up stakes in New York and moved to Colorado Springs in 1978. Then we got the largest of the three Olympic training centers. Over the ensuing decades, we've attracted more than half of all, I think we have 24 Olympic sport governing bodies located in Colorado Springs. We're actively working on picking up a couple of more. And then to top it off, now we're the one and only home of the Olympic and Paralympic Museum and Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and my favorite part of that was really hearing the history of the Olympic movement in the U.S. and seeing some of those historical, whether it was training devices or skating costumes or some of the medals. It really struck a chord with me. And when we were there, because it was in the lead up to the grand opening, Peggy Fleming was there. An Olympian from back in the day. She was great.
Well, back in the day is right. To show you how long I've been around, I remember like it was yesterday. Peggy Fleming won the only gold medal in her Olympics. What are we talking, 68, I think, something like that? And she won the only U.S. gold medal that year. And she was from Colorado Springs, went to Cheyenne High School. I knew her sister who went to St. Mary's when I was there.
Oh, my.
And, oh, yeah, Maxine. And the whole town, this is serious, when she came back, the entire town showed up for a parade down Tejon to honor Peggy Fleming, hometown girl winning the gold medal. So that just...
Wow.
Betrays my age, quite frankly.
Well, but it also shows how this town from an early time really rallied around the Olympic movement. And when you see someone like that, because she became and is still iconic, does
went
commentary
and
commercials
and
everything.
From Carroll College. Yeah.
Yeah.
She and her husband live in Denver and spent a lot of time down here.
That's great. Well, I didn't know about that connection. Mayor Suthers. Wow. You could have been, well, if you hadn't met your wife, you could have married into the Fleming family. She could have been your sister-in-law, you and Mexi.
Who knows?
Let's talk about another area of success, not just the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Museum, but also the airport. We've had on the show the Colorado Springs Airport a couple of times, and they've been talking about how all the building is going on the airport industrial area that's surrounding there. And it sounds like things are full steam go, which might not have been expected.
Yeah, there are a couple of projects that have slowed down. We're going to build two motels, hotels out, actually hotels, on the airport premises, and those have been slowed down a little bit by COVID. Obviously, everybody goes by there can't help but see the 3.7 million square feet Amazon distribution facility. The other thing that's happened out there, we've expanded the runway ramps because the Forest Service is going to build a fire response facility there. We're actually right now, there are planes flying out of there to forest fires in Colorado, but they haven't actually built a permanent facility there, and that will be underway shortly. We've already done the ramp necessary for it, and that's also going to be the ramp where they winterize jets when they, you know, before they take off, they spray the wings and things like that. So, yeah, there's a lot of things going on out there. The level of activity, inquiries, companies, Aerospace Corporation is already out there, and they're just about to break ground on a major expansion. We just signed a letter of intent on another major building out there. So, yeah, the Air Force Airport Business Park is moving ahead. The general aviation side of the airport, some new hangars are going in. So that's all good. Of course, the bad news is that with COVID, our passenger traffic is much, much lower than it was last year. Even though it was 155% increase from June to July, which is the good news, the fact of the matter is we're still, I think, down 55% from last year for July. And that's going to be slow, Shannon. I think it's probably going to take a couple of years, frankly, before leisure travel is back. We'll see how quickly business travel comes back.
Yeah, you like the direction that we're heading in terms of COVID infections because they are going down, but there is a fallout from that in that people aren't traveling to Colorado as much.
That's right, although I think you can, anecdotally, you can see that a lot of people are driving to Colorado.
True. The license plates, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of Texans are spending their summer in Colorado. They've always done that, but I think there may be even a few more of them this summer that's balancing some of the tourism that we've lost from people not flying here.
We're going to touch on this subject again when we come back from break. I'm going to just put it out there, Mayor, and you can think about it over the break, and then we can come back and talk about it. But when you talk about some of these, I guess, major attractions and build-outs that happen within this city, I know that there is EDC involvement, and you have staff that are directly tasked with that. But how much do you think how much of your job is really doing the schmoozing that brings some of these businesses here? And do you look at that as part of your legacy? We're going to be talking about that after the break. We need to take a short commercial break for these messages. Welcome back to The Extra, the show connecting you with people, issues, and topics that are important to you. And today our discussion is with Colorado Springs Mayor John Southers. And Mr. Southers, very pleased to have you on the show today. I was away out of state briefly. I'd been in Colorado Springs for a long time and then moved out of state for a while and then came back. But I was out of state when you first ran for election. When you first decided to run for mayor, did you anticipate how much of your job would be devoted to enticing businesses and government facilities to locate here? And Do you see that as part of your legacy? Do you see what's happened?
Well, when I ran, I had three priorities, and they weren't just something I dreamed up. It was, you know, what I was hearing from the community, what my own observations were. There were three problems. Number one, we were had some fairly serious political dysfunction. The mayor and the council were not in sync, and that was not a lot. And frankly, worse than that, they just weren't getting along, and that was not. Allowing us to move forward in addressing some major issues. And two of the major issues were the job creation was stagnant. Now, we had come out of a recession. This is 2015 when I ran. Obviously, we'd come out of a major recession in 2008, 2009. But from 2005 to 2015, we had only created about 3,000 new jobs a year. And the problem, Shannon, a city our size, for us to take care of the high school and college graduates from Colorado Springs that want to stay in Colorado Springs, just to take care of them, we need to create about 5,000 new jobs a year. And so we weren't really taking care of, you know, the kids that wanted to stay here. And they were moving, and I remember running across a lot of people. Oh, my kids are moving to Denver, they don't want to be here, all that kind of stuff. So job creation was a big issue we needed to do. But one of the other things we needed to do to enhance job creation is we had not done a good job, and there's a variety of reasons, in terms of critical public infrastructure, roads and stormwater. Stormwater is kind of invisible. It's not something you see every day, but we had a lot of legal problems associated with that because we weren't spending enough to deal with stormwater issues. The roads were very visible. And it was something that was clear to me and others that Colorado Springs had to up its, you know, investment in critical public infrastructure to make itself more attractive to companies. You know, when you're out trying to get them to invest in a community, you need to show that you're investing in the community because these companies need the critical public infrastructure. So we went to work on those priorities, and with issue 2C, the voters cooperated in addressing the road problems, and they renewed it last year in what we call 2C2, and we're making a tremendous amount of progress. In issue 2A in 2017, the voters allowed us to address our stormwater problems and work our way out of some of the legal issues. We hope to we're in the final stages of trying to negotiate a resolution of our EPA lawsuit against us. We hope that will happen by the end of the year. And so the bottom line is we've overcome a $1 billion public infrastructure deficit. That has made us more attractive. Then you add to that, we've worked very hard to make sure we have very competitive utility rates, things like that. What companies are looking for, you know, and it's what these companies hire people to go out and kind of look at the country and recommend to them places where they may relocate or something like that. And almost uniformly, number one, they're looking for workforce. Is there a workforce in that community that meets my needs? Right. Now, the good news is we've got a great professional workforce. Got a lot of people coming out of the military with fairly sophisticated skill sets and things
training.
Like cybersecurity, mm-hmm. stuff like that. We've got you know, software engineers, all that sort of thing. Number two, they're looking for you know, what's their costs, what's the tax structure, things like that. What's their utility cost? Very important to them. Reliable utilities and effective cost. You know, what's the cost of living, all that sort of thing. And they look at infrastructure. It was very apparent that they do, and our stepping up our game there has really helped us. Well, until March, when COVID hit, and over the last 5 years, we've attracted 40,000 new jobs. We're averaging about 8,000 new jobs a year, and they're good jobs. So, you know, that's gone very, very well. And I personally think, and this will be a theme in my State of the City on September 17th, I think if you look around the country, we are showing ourselves to be one of the more resilient economies. You know, 40% is military and defense related, and that really has not been hurt
by COVID.
by COVID, are because of our growth and expansion, construction is continuing to boom. Housing, oh my gosh, the home builders tell me they had their best 2 months ever in June and July this year, which is pretty mind-boggling when you think about it. All in all, we're pretty resilient. Yes, we're going to see a reduction in city tax revenue, and we're going to ask the voters to help us out with that and things like that. But if we can, so far, and I'm very complimentary of Governor Polis and the state and local health departments, we've navigated this thing pretty well. We opened a little earlier than a lot of states did, but we did it slowly enough that we didn't have, yes, we had a spike in cases after 4th of July, but we didn't have the thing, the type of spike that Florida, Texas, Arizona had, where they had to kind of reshut down. Yeah, we had to draw back on a few things, reduce indoor crowds and things like that. But so far, so good, knock on wood, the case numbers are starting to decline again. Hospitalizations are in a very, I think yesterday we had 16 hospitalized in El Paso County. For COVID, we were up to 42, 3 or 4 weeks ago. So things are going the right direction, and hopefully this resiliency will carry us through until there's a vaccine and we can, look at COVID through our back window.
Well, and, I think the city, the state, and the nation would like to be at that point. It's too bad we can't take a pill and then just wake up and be past all of this. We're going to be taking a short break right now. When we come back, though, we're going to be talking those numbers, Mayor, and, how the revenues are doing for sales tax, as well as where we are with 2C. And this is year 5 of it. So we're going to be talking about some of those numbers and just getting an idea of where we stand. As well, I'd like to talk to you about some of the social unrest we're seeing in other parts of the country and your thoughts on that. We're talking with Mayor John Suthers of Colorado Springs as The Extra continues after these messages. Welcome to The Extra, the show connecting you with the people, issues, and topics that are important to you. And we're so fortunate to be able to continue our discussion right now with Colorado Springs Mayor John Suthers. And right before the break, we were talking about some of the aspects of his mayorship that have been of interest and importance to him, I should say importance. And one of those that you talked about being of critical importance that you see in shaping the community and as well making it attractive to employers both to expand or to relocate here has been infrastructure. And the 2C tax, we have that right now in year 5. It's set to go to 2025. And that is dedicated to bringing about road improvements. How do you feel it's been?
I think it's really done well. We've been on budget, on pace. We set a goal of 1,100 miles for the first 5 years, and we're going to reach that. We've already indicated to the voters what we're going to address in the second 5 years. And by the way, if you want to see if your street's on the list, you can visit colorsprings.gov/2C and see what roads are in the future. Anybody who's driving around this summer, there's a lot going on. Garden of the Gods has been paved. North Nevada's been paved. I think we're doing the curb and gutter work on Platt, and that's going to be paved. There's a tremendous amount of paving that's taken place this summer. In our second 5 years, Shannon, there's going to be more emphasis on residential streets. Our arterials were in such bad shape that the and of course get the heaviest traffic, and that's where we had to put the emphasis in the first 5 years. So about 90% of the 2C dollars went to arterials. In the second 5 years, at least 50% of the dollars will go to residential streets. Interestingly enough, you don't get quite the mileage because residential streets are shorter and harder to navigate and things like that, and wind up being a little more expensive. But obviously, we've got a lot of residential streets that need a lot of work. So, yeah, I'm very, very happy with the progress of 2C, and I think it's made a huge difference in how we're perceived by people thinking about Colorado Springs because they see that it's a city investing in itself. Having said that, let me tell you something that keeps me up at night. And that's the fact that our local government is investing in infrastructure, but our state government is not investing in state infrastructure, and we have a lot of state infrastructure in our community that needs to be attended to. I'd like to remind people that Powers Boulevard is a state highway. We obviously, as the city grows, Banning Lewis Ranch develops, we're going to need to expand US 24 both west and east, getting into the mountains, getting out to Banning Lewis Ranch, things like that, and Falcon. Highway 94 out to Schriever Air Force Base, if we get needs help right now, frankly, from a safety perspective, but if we get Space Command, that's going to become a much bigger demand there. Obviously, 115 Nevada, that's a state highway. So, if we don't get some help from the state, that's going to be a problem. The estimate is there's about $2 billion of state projects that need to be funded in Region 2. The state's divided up into transportation districts and ours, District 2. There's about $2 billion worth of projects alone in our district.
Right. And we did have CDOT on not so long ago. They did talk about some projects that are bringing in improvements in those areas that you mentioned. But definitely, when you're talking about Powers or Highway 24 or out east, those are major projects that we have yet to hear anything about. So.
Well, CDOT did, we were very fortunate. We got a $23 million grant to deal with some of the military-related capacity. We are
Right.
able to do some improvements to 94. We are able to do some improvements to 25 for access to Fort Carson at the south, at that the gate on the east side of Carson there, things like that. So yeah, we're doing the best we can with the dollars we have, but the state really needs to step up.
And looking at allocating those
Yeah.
revenues, because I don't think anyone is with the COVID pandemic, anyone is has an appetite for any sort of tax increase. Let's talk about the COVID numbers. Sales tax revenues. I think there was a sense of dread when the closures first happened. Everybody knew that the hit was going to be hard and cuts were going to have to be made, and it was going to be a deep financial impact. As things have moved forward, it seems like, and with the assistance of the federal government's CARES Act, it has seemed that maybe there's a little bit of room for cautious optimism, or not quite as much pessimism about the hole we may be facing. Where do we stand in terms of sales tax revenues?
Well, let's start with the bad and then talk about the steadily improving. We were
Okay.
down about 14% in March. About half of the month was impacted by COVID, and then things were pretty much shut down in April, and I think we were down about 22% in April. Yeah, this is in sales and use tax revenue. Our modeling, frankly, when we were running models to make sure we were able to adjust to whatever actually happened, we thought we could be down as much as 40% in April, but we were down 22%. Then things since then have started to improve. We were only down 3.3% in May, which I attributed to kind of a pent-up consumerism coming out of April. And then I think the shocker of shockers, we were actually up a fraction of a percent in June, and that's despite the fact that we're down like 66% in hotel
Wow.
occupancy. And obviously, we're a very tourism-dependent economy. So how do you get as much revenue as you had last year in June without having a bunch of folks staying in the hotels and eating in restaurants and things like that and going to our attractions. And it appears, here's a couple of things. Number one, I told you that we have, because of our military and defense related, we have a lot of people who have maintained their jobs and things like that and still have money to spend. So they were frequenting retail. They've done their best buying pickup and delivery and going to restaurants as those opened. Construction was largely unaffected. You know, all these major construction projects going on have been going full speed ahead. And then the other thing that I think people just don't really think about much is how online delivery has changed the world. And 3 years ago, Shannon, believe it or not, cities could not by law tax online deliveries at the point of delivery.
Right, right.
And it was a huge unfairness, frankly, to brick-and-mortar stores. The Supreme Court came down with a decision that basically said you could. And so, you know, all these big online folks, Amazon, Walmart, all that sort of thing, are now paying sales tax, collecting and paying sales tax for deliveries to residences in the city of Colorado Springs. That's been huge. So, for example, Amazon is, I think, up 188% over last year, something like that. Walmart is the same. And obviously, a lot of people are buying online. So it's really saved us in a lot of ways. So at this point in time, we are we're about 6.5% down in revenue for the year. And we're monitoring, you know, every day or every month as the sales tax numbers come in to see what adjustments we have to make. As I've said on the show already, we cut $21 million. And that was accomplished through a hiring freeze. The city has about 250 fewer employees today than it had last year. That was accomplished through deferring some capital projects. Obviously, we're able to move some reserves as necessary. And then, of course, we got through the county, we got $37.5 million in CARES Act money. The CARES Act money, of course, has to primarily be spent on COVID-related expenses. So that's paying for personal protective gear for police officers, firefighters.
Sanitizing
for all the
stations.
Modifications mm-hmm. the city has to make for right. where we interact with mm-hmm. citizens, all that sort of thing. And it's paying for some of our test site sorts of things. But through Treasury guidance, we were also allowed to apply some of that to police and fire payroll, which really, really helped us out. So the bottom line is, we're going to get through 2020 because of the cuts and CARES Act money. We're going to be able to get through 2020 despite the decrease in revenue. The problem comes in 2021. Under what's called the ratchet down.
I know what we're going to discuss, and it's a hefty topic. So we do need to take a commercial break right now. But Mayor, we're going to pick that up right when we come back here on the Extra on KRDO News Radio. And we're back with the final segment of The Extra here on KRDO News Radio. Our guest today, Colorado Springs Mayor John Southers. And Mayor Southers, just before the break, we were talking about how we're going to finish out 2020 okay, which is surprising given everything that the city and the nation have been through financially. But when it comes to 2021, there is something that we are looking ahead to, and there is a certain amount of financial fallout that could be coming. Tell us about that.
Let me give you an example and try and explain this. Under the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, when there is a significant decline in a governmental unit's revenues, it can present a real problem in something called a ratchet down. So the city's general fund budget's about $330 million. Let's round it to $300 million for purposes of this example. So let's say we took in $300 million in revenue in 2019. In 2020, we take in 10% less because of COVID and the economy, and we take in $270 million. Under the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, our base from which we can grow in future years reduces down to $270 million. And the rate at which we can grow is dictated by Tabor for local governments. It's called inflation plus city growth. And city growth is a very complicated calculation done by the county assessor, and it's basically construction minus destruction. So over the last years that I've been mayor, we've averaged an ability to grow about 3% per year under Tabor. So if you go down 10% to 270, it would take you 3 or 4 years at that permitted growth to for your revenues to grow back to where you were in 2019. The problem, of course, is costs are inflating, the cost of cement, the cost of pavement, and also demand for, as the city grows, demand for services, police, fire, things like that, is increasing. But yet it takes you, you know, 4 years to get back to your 2019 base.
So, and you've missed out on all that growth since then, too.
That's right. That's
so you're
exactly
really
right.
not really not 10% down. You're in 4 years behind. You're more like 8 years behind.
Absolutely. And so what we're going to ask the voters in November to do is allow us to keep the 2019 base, in my example, $300 million, in 21 and going forward. And basically, it allows you to recover in much, much, much less time. Without a tax increase, that's very important. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no, people aren't paying any more or anything like that. But you're allowed, because of that elevated base to grow from, you won't have to refund money, and you'll still, and you'll still be able to meet the growing demand for services.
And so this is being presented on a citywide level, or is this, because I know
well,
the city
will be on your. It'll
on
be
ballot.
On your general fund ballot.
Right.
So after you get through the candidates on the November ballot, then there'll be statewide issues, of which there's like 10 or something like that. And then you'll get, if there's any county issues, and then you'll get city issues, then you'll get special districts and school district issues. So you'll be down the ballot a little bit. There'll be this will be one of the city issues, and the other one will be a choice for the voters on what sort of approvals they want for parkland exchanges. One of the proposals require every single one of those to go to a vote.
Right.
The other proposal says it can be done by a supermajority of council, at least 7 out of 9 votes.
Okay, so that comes in November. Meantime, we have just 1 minute left or so. Mayor, I didn't want to leave this show without asking your thoughts on what's been going on in Kenosha, Wisconsin, as far as the unrest and where you think Colorado Springs maybe has, I guess, played a different role in how race relations seem to be adjusting.
We know, Shannon, it's just every community has different circumstances and what's occurring in those communities and things like that. All I can say is this. Number one, when we had protests here, we were very fortunate. The vast, vast majority of our protesters were focused on their cause. They were exercising their rights in the best traditions of American social activism. I think we did some right things. You know, I met with the I wasn't flamboyant about it. I met with the protest groups. I said, you know, we talked about what would probably be a constructive way to approach things, and we arrived at a council-created commission on police accountability that would make recommendations to the council and the mayor about how we could improve police-community interaction, how we could improve reporting information to them, all that to the community, things like that. And we're in that process. It's really, you know, there's no mystery about this. When incidents occur, they have to be investigated. And I think the concern is that, you know, something happens and you're not really sure exactly what happened, and if people take drastic action at that point in time and the circumstances aren't what they think they are, things like that, that's obviously problematic. People have the right to protest, and we have to respect that right to protest, but people do not have the right to violate the law, whether that be, and blocking traffic is violating the law. Graffiti is violating the law. Breaking windows is violating the law. And we're not going to tolerate it. Yes, we had some incidents where the police probably didn't get there as quickly as they might have, but we followed up. I think that in the case of the people that blocked I-25, I think there's been 15 arrests. In the case where some people blocked traffic out in the neighborhood where one of the police officers lived, I think there's been 5 or 6 arrests. So you're going to be held accountable for violations of the law, and that's really the way to approach it. And then your leadership, I think, has to be calm. It has to be candid. And it has to, remind people, yes, you have certain rights, but you also have responsibilities. And we're going to hold you accountable when you violate the law. And by the way, I think our police have done a great job. I really do. I think
I don't mean to interrupt, but I mean, we are out of time. But I appreciate everything that you've shared with our listeners here on The Extra. Mayor John Suthers, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Shannon.